sealed the doors. You now belong to me for the next 75 minutes. Welcome, everyone, to our session on Web App Compat. And when we talk about Web App Compat, we really are kind of talking about a browser. Because if you think about all of the people who've made amazing things over the course of human history, think about Da Vinci. And what was the best thing about Da Vinci? His paintbrush. It was an amazing paintbrush. That paintbrush was, it had nice bristles, the stiffness was just right. Best paintbrush ever. Or Einstein and his amazing typewriter. And all the things he was able to do with his typewriter. I think he also did some physics or something in there anyway, but the real important thing is the typewriter. And that's really kind of how the web browser conversation tends to go. This browser is the best. You're using the wrong browser. And what I'll say is, you're focused on the wrong thing. It's not the browser. The browser's a tool. What matters is the magic that you create that just happens to coincidentally live inside of the browser. And when we think about that magic, we don't think about it as having to chase the life cycle of a browser as if that's what matters, because it's not. What matters is that you're able to create some magic that does all kinds of incredible things, keeps us safe, cures disease, runs businesses, makes the money that gives me a large bonus, whatever the case may be, and you don't have to redo it every 6 to 8 weeks, every year, every 4 years. What matters is what you create being durable is the most important thing. So what we want to talk about today, well, we're going to talk about a browser, because obviously I have a horse in this race, so I acknowledge my bias, but we're going to talk about principles for how to keep applications working, how to troubleshoot, and how to really understand the web as it exists today. So we're going to really lay the groundwork a little bit about the process. We're going to talk about the tools, and we're going to do some debugging. My commitment to you is not to show you a single PowerPoint slide this entire session. Not one. Which means you won't get your QR code, because that's in the PowerPoints. But if we can agree, no QR code, therefore equals no PowerPoints at all, do we have a deal? Everyone's like, yeah, Lord, yes, no PowerPoints. That's fantastic. So that's the perspective that we have. Apps are what matters, and we want to be able to run them and have them be durable. So when we think about, you know, durable applications, I want to really kind of go into a little bit of depth on, you know, IE and the compatibility infrastructure that it uses. So I guess I'll ask first, because it's sort of an interesting audience for the browser, in that IE does not have, if I'm not mistaken, still doesn't have majority market share in Europe. Is that correct still, Fred?
It depends on what source you use.
It depends on what source you use. So there's people who use a lot of different browsers, more so here than in other areas that we go. How many of you are using IE within the company that you have? Okay, and so keep your hands up if that version is at least IE 8. And I hope all the hands stay up. All right, if it's at least 9, at least 10, at least 11. So there are a couple of folks who are on 11. I don't know how much I'm going to be able to help you other than talking about modernization. I think there are some good conversations. But when we think about this whole concept of 11, right, the process of how to get there, I think is important to have an opinion and be able to defend that opinion. So like most organizations, I'm guessing that the reason this is interesting to you is that, and maybe you didn't know this, we announced in August that we are no longer going to support older versions of IE on Windows 7, effective at the end, the first patch Tuesday after the end of next calendar year. So about, 15 months from now. And sort of the whole world said, oh, wow, that's a lot going on. And they ask why, and you know, there's a lot of reasons why, but here's the reason that really makes, to me, the most sense for our enterprise customers. Yes, you had a choice for which browser you wanted to use. So did every single one of your vendors. And it turns out they don't all make the same choice. And so literally 0% of the customers that I've spoken with, none of them can choose a single browser in which all of their vendors agree to support their applications. There are those who say, I only support IE8 because IE8 was fantastic. It's the greatest browser ever. And or I'd rather you buy my new product to get newer support. That's only a couple million dollars in a 12-month project, so that should be no problem for you. And there are those cloud services as a great example where the de facto standard has become N or N-1. So now you've got some people who say, I only support 8, and some that say, I only support 10 or 11. You've got a few who say, I only support 9, some 9s and 10s, and this incredible mishmash where literally you can't make a choice. There is no option available. So by reducing fragmentation, we hope to reduce the number of impossible choices that exist out there. I'm not optimistic that that problem will go away completely. Look at Java. Java has the exact same stand. You get only the latest version of Java if you want support. And there are still vendors who say, well, no, you got to lock in on this one particular version, and as vulnerabilities are found, I guess you'll be vulnerable until you buy a new one. It hasn't gone to zero, but it got a lot lower, and it was better. And so that's what we want to do, is we want to help you, because here's what we also see. I have this conundrum where I have things only supported on 8, not supported on 11, and vice versa, only supported on 11, not supported on 8. That's kind of the most common decision I make, although, you know, it could be 9 or 10 or whatever. I have this conundrum. At least if I'm on IE11, I can have the unsupported IE8 apps that probably work. Whereas if I stay with the old one, my unsupported apps probably don't work. So if I look at support, I'm in the same bad spot. If I look at functionality, I'm in a better spot. So while I didn't move both of them to where I'd love them to be, at least I moved one of them, and isn't that better? And the support question is sort of the ongoing problem and challenge that we have to do. So this is kind of where we stand, and when we start talking about how do we modernize, how do we get things there, a real big temptation that I see is I would like to go and get everything running in the latest possible standards because that's really important to me. And I see folks having the conversation of, well, let's go in here and, you know, find this. Hold on, I'm looking in the wrong spot. Compatibility view settings, and let's find this checkbox and say, you know what, I'm tired of having a dependency on old stuff, so let me go ahead and uncheck that guy and do everything new. And so when we talk about the process that I recommend, and I'll tell you why I recommend it, it says, let your old stuff be old stuff for now. And here's why. There's going to be a period of transition where I'm going to have some of my users running whatever browser I'm on today, 8 or 9 or 10, while my new deployments are all on IE11. If I say I can only use modern standards, I will not rely on our legacy compatibility modes to make things work, then I have to write code by definition that continues to work on both of them, which means I'm running least common denominator HTML5 code. Stuff that only does things that were supported in the older document modes, and we'll talk about how that compatibility works, and not really taking advantage of all the goodness that I could. Whereas I think it works better to say, let's get to the new browser, because as soon as I get there, 100% of my audience, all of them, will have a modern browser, and then I can do everything, which is a much better spot to be in. So in order to get there, let's take a tour through how we approach compatibility in the context of the browser and what Microsoft does. So to show that, I'm going to go into the developer tools. And from the developer tools, I've gone to the emulation tab, which is sort of obviously a picture of two little computers because that's the most clearest definition of the word emulation ever, right? And on this emulation tab, we show this concept that we call document modes. And what document modes are is it's the fundamental building block of how we do compatibility within Internet Explorer. It's a way to say, behave as if I were IE 5 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or Edge, which is what we call 11. Behave like that. And by behave, it determines layout. So how does HTML lay out in the page? It determines how JavaScripts are handled, right? Or scripts in general, because one thing that also came up with IE 11 is we no longer support VBScript in the Edge mode engine, but we still do in the previous ones. So you can dial the clock back to any of these. It's something that we actually originally had in place way back in IE 6. Probably a lot of people have noticed that there is no 6 on there. In the era of IE 6, it's sort of hard to think of this today, but IE 6's standards compliance was so much higher than what we did for 5 that we worried we were going to break the web. Everyone's like laughing, but this, you know, this is true, right? It was the standards compliance were really good. In fact, in CSS compliance, we were number one throughout the 90s. No one could touch us. We said it's so much better that we're going to break the web. So we actually split it in two, and we said, okay, developers can tell us when they're ready by putting a doc type into their code. And if they don't tell us, then we'll just assume it's old code, because, of course, developers always read documentation, always embrace new things immediately, which is played out by the fact that I've talked to developers in 47 different countries of the world in every different time zone, and I have so far met 6 people who could tell me accurately what a doc type does. So perhaps that message didn't get out quite as well as we'd hoped. But you would have six standards and quirks is what we called them. When we made the move to IE7, we talked to folks, and they said, if I want standards, I want the best standards you've got. I have no use for an old standards. So we got rid of 6 standards, but we have the bottom half of 5, which realistically is what most applications go in. And in fact, an interesting statistic, roughly 70% of all enterprise web applications in use today are running still in IE5 quirks. I've got a couple of like, really? Really? Right? And we'll talk about the defaults and configuration and control and how to change that and why to change that. So we made the transition to 7 standards, what we call now, became standards, and 5 remained quirks and was the same. We moved to IE8. We said, oh, we're doing another revolutionary change in how we do standard support. So we'll keep the existing ones to keep them compatible. We'll call that 7 standards. We'll have a new 8 standards. And then we'll have quirks. And you'll switch back between these 3 modes with a binary switch, because 3 and 2 are the same number, apparently. But it mostly worked. And then as we continued to release more, we added HTML5 support. We kept all the old ones in tow to maximize compatibility. And what we found is that nearly everything could be manipulated using docket mode. You can get just about everything working. And the original plan we had back in IE8 was, let's take all of your internal stuff and let's throw it into compatibility view. So the default setting of run my local intranet zone in compat view was designed to keep all the stuff, presumably on IE7 or 6, working well in IE8, and so therefore nothing would have to change. And consequently, as time went on, if we changed what the default compatibility view was, it would become less compatible, not desirable for a compatibility feature. So it kind of stayed in place, where here's IE7 level compatibility going forward. So that's sort of the foundation of what we did. And I wanted to explain that to kind of say, how have we been trying to improve this? Because we've got this incredibly powerful framework for keeping web applications working. And yet, it's a little bit difficult to control, because the people who have the full ability to manipulate it are developers. If I go in and I'll bring up the documentation here for XUA compatible. See, I'll bring up my blog because I know how that reads. We talk about how you can add in a header. And here's the correct syntax here, that will specify, I'd like to run in this document mode. I get my choice of all of them, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or interoperable quirks. I get all of that possibility there, and I can directly manipulate it, putting it right in the page itself. And if I don't want to touch each individual page, I can also emit it as a header from the web server and ask for what I want. Well, guess what? That means if I'm the IT administrator in control of it, I've got to go then talk to the people who run these web servers and have them put this header in there. Oh, and another interesting thing that's been happening lately is a lot of the applications that I use, I don't run in my own data center, so I don't even have access to the web servers, so that's a bit of a problem. So how do we take the space we're in and make it easier to go? We had CompatView, and it would blanket apply to the local internet, and you could add it to additional sites with one small minor problem, which is, oh, it only applies to the top-level domain. So as soon as I put in Microsoft.com, everything at Microsoft is suddenly in CompatView, regardless of how much I tried to finally regulate that. And that was a problem. So we said, okay, let's back up and rethink how we do this in order to really understand how can we make this more manageable and how do we target where people actually are today, which is on, in the majority case, where people are struggling if they're on IE8. So that's why we created this thing called Enterprise Mode, right? And we'll talk about how that dials into the process a little bit later, but I want to kind of finish going through here. Enterprise Mode, the whole concept is, let's take all the stuff that's working on 8 and make it behave in very much the same way as if it were actual IE8. So here's an application, for example. This is some poor random town in Indiana that happened to show up to one of my sessions and say, oh, here's my website. Can you help me fix it? And it happens to be fixed beautifully by Enterprise Mode. Right, because it kind of does a whole lot of nothing. You know, it really pauses and the menus are not terribly interactive. Right, and it lets me just go and say, you know what, behave like you would have if I were IE8. And with one click of the mouse, if you've not seen this before, then suddenly everything lights up. All right, and we're going to get nerdy. I know you walked into a screen full of HTML. I know we're talking high-level stuff now. And my plan, just to make sure everyone is on the same track, we're going to be going back and forth between the high-level stuff, how do you manage the project the right way, the low-level stuff, how do you debug things, and we're going to have a little bit of it all, right? So for anyone who's ready for some hardcore nerd debugging, we're getting there. So I just wanted to say, please be patient. It's coming. But if you understand this, what you can do is you can focus your attention on debugging the truly hard problems as opposed to spending a whole bunch of time and a whole lot of resources debugging things that you could fix with a click of a button. And that's our goal, right? If you have X amount of money spent to modernize your browser and your web, you can either choose to spend a lot of money modernizing the browser or leverage the features that are in there, which starts with understanding them, and spend a small amount of money upgrading your browser and then take the leftover money and use it to actually create good HTML5 content that takes advantage of your browser. I'd rather you did that one. And so that's why I want to spend some time covering this. In one click of a button, we were able to go from broken to fixed. Now, what we did in doing that was we just changed the document mode that we're using. So if I look at what document mode I'm using here, Enterprise Mode limits me to 3 of them because IE8 had 3 of them. With compatibility view, you could opt out by using XUA compatible and say, I'd like to XUA compatible, behave like I was IE10, so ignore the default. With enterprise mode, we behave like IE8 did. You say IE equals 10, please jump me forward. What did IE8 do? IE8 would see the 10 and go, oh, well, I haven't got a 10, so I'll give you the highest I've got, which is an 8. So you can't escape it. And I mention that because as I have this plan, a lot of people start with, well, I'm just going to start by blanketing my entire intranet, everything we do, and put it all in enterprise mode. Well, then you need to make sure you then have a process for people to opt out the path to their application so that it no longer gets enterprise mode clobbering it. Otherwise, they won't be able to opt out at the developer level. They are dependent on you taking them off of the hold me back list. Right? So we limit to these, and we pick one of these document modes, and that's how we begin to work. It also changes the user agent string that we send. It just says default. It's the default for enterprise mode, which is really the IE8 user agent string. User agent strings, and I talk about this in my app compat session as well, it's the last bane that we have on the scourge of app compat, if you will, the source of a huge, huge number of problems. It's actually pretty interesting when you look at the user agent string concept. Let's actually go and take a look at a user agent string that's being fed back to me. Here's a user agent string, and it's saying, OK, I'm IE8 because I'm in enterprise mode. And if I turn off enterprise mode, that switch is awesome because it's not letting me. That's very useful. I could, yeah, that could be the F12 tools that are clobbering me. Yes, I believe you are right. Here, if I refresh that, that's awesome. Yes, yes, yes. All right, so now I see what the default user agent string is, which is a whole lot shorter. And interestingly, what's missing? MSIE is no longer there at all. Right, so enterprise mode is the changes in the behavior, but it's also changes in what we claim to be. Right, this is the change that we very deliberately made for IE11, because here's the problem we had on the public internet. The public internet, we had all kinds of people who were out to seek and destroy IE, based on their experience with previous versions. I mean, let's be honest. If they let you come in with IE8, you would usually have a pretty bad experience on an HTML5 website. They couldn't imagine a world in which people upgraded their IEs. They didn't. So therefore, IE must be terrible. So they would just look for MSIE and go, oh, if it says MSIE, it must be a terrible browser. So let's either give it really crusty old HTML or maybe nothing at all. And so we changed it to remove that so that people would stop seeing us. We hid from people who had us blacklisted. And as a consequence, we also hid from people who had us whitelisted. People who were saying, oh, I'm only going to serve IE. Oh, I don't know you. You must be like one of those Firefoxes or something. So I'm just going to give you nothing because I'm designed for IE. Right, and this is the problem that we have. Interestingly, when you think about how this manifests everywhere, in the world of Windows app compat, until you add an application manifest that specifies you know about either 8.1 or 10.0, we'll continue to pretend by default we lie and say we're 8.0. We just stopped changing the version number because that was the number one source of application failures. Right, I mean, that's kind of the position that we're in, is things don't break nearly as often anymore until you check to see whether you know whoever is coming to visit you and then refuse to serve them. So that's the problem. So enterprise mode will change the user agent string that gets sent. Compatibility view, similarly, if I added this site to compatibility view, I would get the entire domain, of course, and it would then say, oh, I'm IE7. That's part of the magic. So it's behavior. It's limiting and getting you into the same document mode that you would have been in on actual IE8, and it's making it more manageable. That is where we start with in terms of enterprise mode. A frequently asked question about it. I'm not going to beat enterprise mode to death because there's a whole session this afternoon all about it that my friend Fred here is giving at 3:15. At 3:15, I'm going to give you the nerdy bits. He's going to give you the management bits and the tooling and all of that kind of stuff. But I want to explain what's going on behind the scenes so you understand what's happening. We're constraining the document modes, we're giving a different user agent string, and a frequently asked question, we do not eliminate the need to use compat view because enterprise mode emulates IE8, and IE8 had compat view. So if you take away compat view, from IE8, you'll get this same outcomes that you get if you take it away from enterprise mode. They're additive. If I need to be in 7 standards mode, or say I'm IE7, I need compat view to do that for me. It's not enough to just show enterprise mode and I can get rid of compat view. I still need them both while I can still label them. So that's foundational. So let's go ahead and take a look at some examples and do some troubleshooting to take a look at how we can resolve some issues. And so what I've done, and I always cross my fingers when I do these demos, because I pull these demos from live public websites that you can go to. The URL's right there. You can try it. This is not an artificial demo. This is someone's real website. And I'm terrified that someday someone's going to fix these things before I get here. So far, I've not had that pan out. And it's really funny, because one of them I've been including in demos for, I think, 4.5 to 5 years now. It's been recorded at least 5 times on Channel 9. Here's how you debug it. Here's the problem code. And here's how you should fix it. And I write out the code, and I zoom in on it. And they have, you know, as you'll see, thus far managed to say we're not fixing it. This is also one of my favorites. I haven't shown it in a long time, but you know, they claim that, you know, they'll support it very soon. It's been saying that since 2009. So their definition of very soon and mine might be somewhat different. And then they say, in the meantime, try, I don't know, anything else, a good browser. Let's just rephrase it as that. And so the question is, right, when you think about troubleshooting this, right, one thing I could try is enterprise mode, and it's not going to help, right? So let's figure out why. It's saying we don't support Internet Explorer. What I want to do is, excuse me, get in with the dev tools and see if I can figure out why. So we currently do not support is a string. I'm going to look for that. Right, so when I don't know what's going on, oh, that's fantastic. It just crashed. See, by the way, best practice is to always run pre-production code in your demos for the best results. So let's see if I can find it. Ah, so here we go. So here is, right, and we'll kind of chase it down. So I'll kind of go through some of the tools that I use and explain them. Right now I'm using the F12 tools. Is there anyone in the room that's not familiar with the F12 tools? All right, so everyone's used them. How many of you feel that you're an expert at it and you kind of totally get it? All right, so there's lots of good. We've had them since IE8. They've gotten a lot better. And I just want to kind of step through my process of thinking through this and how we can make this so. So I'm going to take a look here, and I'm going to see, all right, so here's this thing that I'm showing up, and it's sitting inside of this div called IE container, which says don't display it. So aha, so here's this thing that starts off not being shown, and it gets shown in response to something. So I can probably find some reference to this somewhere in the code. So if I just do a search for that, so here's IE element is this. So that's how they find it, get element by ID. So now I should be able to look for this and see how it's getting done. Oh, if browser detect.browser equals explorer, then display it. And that happens only in this case off of test IE. And I can start, you know, making my way through here and seeing, well, how do I do test IE and in what circumstances? And sort that out. And it all hinges on this bird element. Right? I'm not going to sit, because debugging is one of those really boring things to watch. So I'm hitting the fast forward button. Believe me, I didn't solve the problem this quickly. So I went through pretty quickly and said, oh, bird element, let's see what this one is. And if I start looking around for what this is, is that a reference in code? It's bird. The bird element and bird, if I search for that, let me find the next one. And eventually I'll get this div, ID equals bird. And inside of this div ends up being other divs. And eventually I get to the point where, if I kind of fast forward through some more things, I realize that it's doing some determination over whether or not I'm able to create an element. They're actually doing the right thing. They're detecting features. Right? And when they don't detect the features, they end up triggering a loop that says, well, oh, is this because I'm IE? Oh, well, then give it a warning about IE is kind of how that logic went. So you're like, well, they started with the right thing, but we support Canvas, which is the kind of element they were trying to create. You're like, well, why wouldn't they have gotten Canvas? Remember document modes? Older document modes behave exactly like that old browser. So they don't support the new stuff. They are not forward compatible by design. Otherwise, they would be less compatible. So like, well, why on earth wouldn't you be, huh? Incidentally, it's this very line of thought that means that led us to say, let's put that thing in the upper right-hand corner. That's the document mode. It's so important. It's so central to everything that you do that you should always be hyper aware of your document mode. This one's landing in IE7 document mode. Why is it in IE7 document mode? That's really strange. And so the first thing I do is I suspect, well, perhaps it's in the wrong zone. So I can go and right-click properties, except for it's handling right-clicks, which is awesome. So let me see if I can go find properties. File properties. And this will tell me what zone it's in. It's like, oh, no, it's in the internet zone. So it's not been miszoned. I haven't captured it. Like, I didn't, MSIT didn't drop something strange down. So why is it in IE7 mode? Well, why would you land there? Someone could have put a policy, but that would be weird. Well, what are the ways to get there? Group policy, internet zone, or the developer asked for it. Right? So, developer asked for it. Well, there's two places where they can go and ask for it. One of them is via a header in what they comes from the web server. Okay, how can you sniff that? Well, part of the F12 tools that we've had since, I believe, 9, I don't know if it was 9 or 10, but I'm pretty sure it was 9, we added this network tab where you can go in and you can listen in on the network and see, all right, what's happening? So we'll go through and remake that request. Yeah, you can actually see the bug here, if ocanvas.getContext2D, and it's like, oh, we don't support getContext because ocanvas doesn't work because it's this canvas element. So now you're kind of seeing a little bit behind the curtains. But I'm not interested in that right now. I'm interested in, was the server configuration asking for it? And here's how you can see it. I can look in, if I go back to my summary, here's all the requests. Here's the HTML page it asked for. Here are the request headers that were sent. Here's the request body. It wasn't a form post, there was nothing there. Here's the response headers and the response body. So there were no headers, which is completely weird, but okay, there's no headers here. So clearly nothing can be asking for IE11. That may also be just because it's caught in a debugger, so let me actually let that finish and let me stop network and dive in again. See all kinds of fun awesomeness here. Keep going. I don't care. It's not, just run the code. I really want to see that, yes, indeed, there are no headers. So therefore, it can't be asking for it. So my goodness, where else could it be? Oh. So you've created an HTML5 website and then said, please behave like a version of IE that doesn't do HTML5, and that's why you're broken, really. And sure enough, if we were to overrule this, which I can do really quickly and easy, and just say, you know what, let's just give it, edge. Refresh the page, and when I give it edge, oh, look, it's just loading. We don't hit the error, and it turns out that everything works fine. Now, I don't like to think bad thought. I don't think this person was deliberately trying to sabotage it, although it does put in suspicion the fact that they're working really hard on providing IE support, which would mean deleting that XUA compatible tag. That would be the extent of the effort required. So I don't think they're working as hard as they may claim to be working, but here's what I guess happened. I'm guessing that they, like most of the world, had no concept of what document modes meant. They looked and found some documentation that said, this makes things more compatible. And they thought, oh, it'll make it more compatible with Chrome and other things like that. Good, let's put that in there. And forgot they put it in there. And just never went back. I don't think they did it to be malicious, although they might have. I don't know. I've never met them. I think they just didn't understand it. if you understand document modes, you have a lot of power over what IE does. IE is the only browser that provides the ability to behave all the way back to 5. We're the only one. Everyone else has 2 modes. They have standards and quirks, and that's it. Standards evolves, then they just break your old stuff. As opposed to saying, well, if standards evolve, you can still tie it back to this particular implementation thereof. Right? And once you understand that, right, is it aspirational to get everything running in the latest standards? Yes, absolutely, and we'll talk about why. Can I do that overnight? With the average age of an enterprise web application being 12 years, that's not overnight. So how do I align my sense of durability with what browsers are able to do? That, I think, is the real magic of IE, is that we care about your old stuff. And if you know how to manipulate it, you can give it the same love. And you can really keep things going, because that's really powerful. Now I have the modern web and the legacy web side by side. Just make sure I give it the right one. So let's take another example and kind of troubleshoot that one. And this is one that happens to be used in healthcare. So I get this example, and it comes up kind of a lot because I have a friend of mine who's the director of functional and stereotactic neurosurgery at Northwestern University. So we have a deal. Every time my brain breaks, he takes care of it. And every time his computer breaks, I take care of him. Thus far, he's kind of gotten the better end of the deal, and I'm okay with that. But it means I end up visiting a lot of applications like this. This is a commercially available, it's called a PACS application. It lets you see radiology images, and it's used in a ton of places. And the first thing it does is go through a bunch of checks. And it comes across and says, oh, your version of MS Script Engine is not sufficient. It will not function correctly, guaranteed. And I'm sure that they're right, because no one's ever lied in a version check. That's simply impossible. So if I go in and take a look at it, again, I'm going to start with the F12 tools, and I'm going to look for that really interesting word, sufficient. And I find it in a couple of places. And here's where I find it actually in the code where I'm doing the test results. And if I scroll up a bit in the code, I can actually see the logical comparison that went into outputting those test results. Here's the thing. That's not their original code. Their original code, so they actually did go in and change it. The original code was Script Engine minor version is greater than or equal to 5, and Script Engine major version is greater than or equal to 6. That was their original code. Now, what's the logical problem with that code? All right, let's make a new, where's my notepad plus here? Let's make a new bit of code, right? If Script Engine major greater than or equal to 5, and Script Engine minor greater than or equal to 6. What happens when, in IE9 you make it 9.0? Well, 9 is greater than or equal to 5, so we're good. But 0 is not greater than or equal to 6. The logical check has a bug. That's the wrong logical expression for what they're trying to achieve. It would have worked on everything that existed through 6.0. So therefore, even if they had really good encoded test plans, it would have passed. So I understand why that happens. Incidentally, if you've ever wondered why the version of Windows for 10 isn't 10, why 8 wasn't 8, why 8.1 wasn't 8.1, the reason why is because AppCompat decides what the version of Windows is now, because it has such a major impact. And lots and lots of logical checks were written for Windows XP that looked for 5.1 like that. So if we make it 6.0, which we did for Vista, all kinds of things broke on that check. So when we made Windows 7, we said, well, let's not make it 7.0 and repeat that mistake. Let's call it 6.1. and then it'll pass. It had nothing to do with major or minor. Believe me, there is no executive voicing in on this at all anymore. This is all app compat. We get to decide. Then we're like, all right, well, Windows 8, 6. I don't know, 2. Oh, 8.1, 6.3. 10.0, 6.4. It will probably be 6 forever. I don't think we'll ever see another major version number of Windows in order to pass these checks. I mean, eventually we might, but then it just becomes less compatible, and we'll have to figure out some way to work around it. But that was the logical check they had, and they obviously knew that that was a problem because they quote-unquote fixed it by adding in this list. And I've seen people making lists like this. I once watched someone take an MSI that had a launch condition. Anyone do MSIs and know launch conditions? MSI launch condition version NT equals 400 or 500 or 501 or 502 or 600 or 601. And they're fixed for Windows 8. They were started to type or. And I just looked at him and went, seriously? You don't have a greater than key? He's like, oh. So this have a long list. So the question then becomes, well, what if I added something in, and how could I fix this? So the next tool I want to show you is the one that I next use most frequently, which is called Fiddler. How many of you are familiar with Fiddler? All right. So most people here, I'll show you how the ways that I use it. Fiddler's one of those sort of tools that it's so many different ways to use it. I just love watching other people use it just to figure, oh, I never thought about doing that. It's completely open-ended. So I'm going to use this to go ahead and capture this whole conversation. And I'm going to go ahead and get out of the debugger here. I'm going to refresh this web page. Oh, I don't want that. I want this web page and hit refresh. There's the web page. I would have now captured everything in Fiddler. And now I'm just going to real quickly do a Control F to search for sufficient because I'm lazy and I want to look through everything. And I'm going to stop capturing because obviously there's a lot of traffic going on from all of my various synchronization things. So here's the check. It's in this thing called checks.js. So all right, what I can do with that is I can save the response. Either the entire response, which includes the headers, but I'm not interested in those, or just the response body. And I'm going to tuck that away on my desktop. And then from the desktop, I'm going to go in and edit this. And look for that term again, sufficient. Ah, here's the error. And let's write it right for these guys. So I don't want to look at the string. I'm not going to add an or and do it wrong. I'm going to do a script engine major version is greater than 5. All of those are fine. I'm going to do that first because that's what I expect most of my clients to be. So I can short circuit the logical check and get a performance optimization because, hey, I'm a nerd. And then I'm going to say, all right, well, I still have the edge case of what if it equals 5. Let me make sure about that. And so one thing I would want to consider is, do I really have to check on that? This is the weird oddball thing about enterprise web applications. You control the environment, unless you have a BYOD environment, and BYOD is probably more modern than you. So you're going to enforce with every single browser event checking on your standards, or you can just do it once and just take a look at some reports in Configuration Manager. Which do you think is more efficient? Having every single user check every single time for every single page? Probably not. So I can change this and write it right. So script engine major version, if it equals 5, and script engine minor version is greater than or equal to 6. Right, so greater than 5, greater than or equal to 6, then we're going to end up in the OK. Otherwise, we're going to end up in failure. I'm going to just make sure my logic is correct because I've been known to make mistakes on that because it is not the easiest logic. So now that should be the right way. And this is where Fiddler is really a beautiful thing, is that I can leverage the autoresponder functionality. And autoresponder, what that will do is it will allow me to plug something in. So if I don't have access to the web server, if I just want to make sure I'm right before I bug these people, because that's a really big thing that I notice, is if I ask them to do something and it still doesn't fix it, and I have to ask them for something else, they're less responsive the second time. Right? And this is one of those, because I'm just this external guy that they've never met before, right? I came in, I debugged a site, and I said, here's how your site is broken. Number one, they're like, wait, my site's not broken. It must be your browser, right? So there's the initial defensiveness going on. And then number two is they don't want to have their time wasted, which I get. This lets me make sure that I'm not wasting their time. So here's how, I'll actually show you how I did it, and then we'll actually do it so it actually works. So I took this, and I said, let's just go ahead and replace this. This is pretty sweet. It's not giving me access to the bottom line. Then respond with, that's what I want to change. Well, this is an awesome bug. See how there's a little bit of extra stuff down here that I can't get to? That's where I configure this. All right, so what I've done is I went ahead and pause and take a breath. In my line of work, there's no such thing as a failed demo. There are just unplanned debugging demos. So what we have going on here is that I have set Fiddler to not use DWM scaling, and I think that may be causing me some issues. So let me go ahead and close Fiddler and right-click, go into the properties, and I force it by putting this checkbox on right here. So let's go ahead and take that off, which will make it much fuzzier and harder to read, but hopefully allow me to actually modify the contents here in the rule editor. And of course, the answer to that is a big colossal no, so that didn't fix it. Can I tab to it? Yes. I wonder, yeah, if I... I can't really see it. All right, let me try, hold on, step number two, I'm going to try putting it only on my screen to see if I can fix it and then put it back, and you'll have to take my word for it. Let me relaunch it. This is awesome. This actually works great when not presenting. I am fascinated by this. All right, so I don't think we can actually show this to you because I have the inability to edit it. All right, well, so let's use our imagination. Let's get something on the screen because that's really boring to see nothing at all. And we'll use our imaginations. And what I would have been able to do had Eric Lawrence knew how to write good code. Let's make sure we get that on the tape. So Eric Lawrence, the guy who writes Fiddler, so he used to be a program manager on the Internet Explorer team, and this is a tool that he wrote in his free time. You know you're a nerd if in your free time your hobby is writing HTTP web debuggers. And so he now works for Telerik, and he gets to develop Fiddler full time, and clearly that effort has paid off. And what I would have been able to do is, number one, see that this fixed nothing because the vendor helpfully puts a suffix onto each and every single web request with the time that it was requested, which serves to me no useful purpose whatsoever. And upon doing that, then generates all kinds of havoc, which you can fix by switching it to a regular expression, which Fiddler also supports, and just say, all right, well, any characters after this are fine. And Is there a keystroke to show a drop-down list? Does anyone know that? I can save it, but it's not going to be pulling a file right now. So it's going to be replacing it with nothing, which isn't helpful. Yeah, I don't think that that's edit response. No local file exists. So let me try. Edit response. Yeah, so in this case, you could potentially, what we'd be trying to do is figure out what it would take for them to create the HTML that works correctly. So that leads to the point. So we'll use our imaginations and envision that you saw it working. Because I promise it really does. Right? And then you think to yourself, all right, well, that's really great, assuming that I have the ability to go in and get it fixed. And that may not be true. It turns out there's another way to do this. Anyone want to venture a guess as to what that other way is? I could not bother doing any code at all and just throw it into enterprise mode. So I always have that option, right? And it works just fine, and now I'm ready to log in. So I had the hard way, and I had the easy way. And what we found to kind of talk about some of the statistics is that when customers leverage enterprise mode to get them to 11 faster, if they find any applications that don't work, that work on 8, that don't work in enterprise mode, if they find any, a lot of them find none, we have yet to find folks who find more than a handful. Like one of the known things that is out there is there are some, and I don't know all the versions, and I don't know if I'm supposed to be talking about this or not, but you're going to find it, so I may as well not bother lying to you. There are versions of business objects. And what they were doing specifically in their code is they were working around a bug in IE8. And the only way for us to fix it would be to put that bug back or to pretend to be some other browser or do all kinds of other things which would make enterprise mode even less compatible with basically everything else. So we're still trying to sort out how we can leverage that for those who have those particular versions of business objects. Beyond that, there is not that much that we're finding that it works in IE8 and doesn't work in enterprise mode. I had one example, and I blogged about it earlier this week, which was almost completely insane. Because what they, I mean, and I can quickly summarize it up, which was the application was using VBScript, but being put into Edge mode was causing it to break because IE11 mode doesn't support VBScript anymore. So you're like, okay, great, no problem, throw it in Enterprise mode because IE8 mode still supports VBScript and everything's cool. Except Enterprise mode wasn't changing it. So I said, well, why would that be happening? And I took a look and said, oh, wait, we're not actually manipulating the HTML directly, but instead you've got the HTML page that's hosting an ActiveX control that's hosting the web browser control that has the code with the VBScript. And then you think, well, that's really strange. The VBScript, the browser control defaults to IE7 compatibility view, which they were getting around by injecting Mark of the Web, which I could get around by deleting the Mark of the Web or adding an XUA compatible or both. Except I couldn't figure out where the HTML was coming from. Turns out it was coming from one of the resources in a DLL it installed when it installed the ActiveX control, and it was injecting it into the local file system every single time, so you had to resource hack the DLL to be able to fix the web application. Enterprise mode didn't fix that one. So there are a few, but they are nearly criminally insane when we're not fixing it. And you've got to decide when it makes sense to fix your code versus when you don't want to fix your code. And one of the things to consider, I'm going to go ahead and copy this URL and show you a side-by-side comparison, is if I have the choice between where most of my applications live, some variant of compat view, IE5 or IE7, and modern standards, what are the advantages? Well, I can use things like WebGL and make these beautiful animated fish, because that's really useful to my business. I can use things like Canvas and make interactive graphs. That actually might be useful, but it requires me to write the code to create those things that don't exist. One of the things that a lot of people don't think about is, well, our performance optimization work is really very squarely focused on modern document modes. Older ones inherit a lot of it, but here's a side-by-side test ran yesterday on my computer, because watching this run is about as interesting as watching paint dry. Side-by-side, same site, same test. It's the SunSpider test, which is by the WebKit guys. It's not our test. And you can see the difference between from and to, right? From is IE5 Quirks mode. To is IE11 Standards mode. The difference in performance, you can see, is about 11 times as fast. So if I invest a bit of time in making my site compatible with modern standards, even if I don't write any new code, I potentially can have my JavaScript execute 11 times faster. Isn't that interesting? And start to get some really significant business value coming out of that. Because now I stop having complaints. This was the number one thing. In fact, I started running these sort of side-by-side tests when I had a customer I was visiting in London come in with their laptop and say, listen, all of this talk about how IE is fast now, I don't believe you. And here's an example, pulls up Firefox, pulls up IE, and it's going a lot slower. And I looked, I said, yeah, you're right, that is a lot slower. And I hit F12, and I said, you're in IE5 Quirks mode on your IE. Now, since it worked on Firefox, I suspected it would probably work in standards mode, so I just bumped it forward, and suddenly IE was the one that was a lot faster. So here's the thing. Getting to IE11 quickly means leverage all the compat view stuff. And it's not going to be slower. In fact, it's probably going to be way faster than it is on actual 8. But it won't be as fast as it could be if you move it to the most recent document modes. You're going to be really handicapping yourself quite a bit if you never go back and change it. So there's the opportunity. Where it drives value to continue investing, go back and invest. The fact that it works at all doesn't mean you're getting the most bang for your buck. Right, so plan out what that strategy is going to be. So there's been a few changes that have come in. Here's another example that we were troubleshooting. This was an interesting one that actually breaks if I put it into enterprise mode as opposed to working. So if you look at some of the things we've done, this is a website that was designed in education. In the U.S. in education, Firefox is a big, big player. Older versions of IE didn't handle it well. So the changes we've been making in terms of our defaults actually makes us behave a lot more like other browsers. So it's the ability to leverage both the modern and the legacy web that ends up being really important. Now, the reason why this was coming in as a Quirks mode web page at all, this is the interesting bit for me, is their choice of a doc type. All right, so remember the earlier statement I made, right? The developers don't tend to know what doc types are, how they work. Is there anything wrong with that doc type? It's transitional, right? Which is a valid doc type declaration. This is one of those things, who's going to read the documentation? Well, let's look at the documentation and find out what it says. And say, oh, okay, well, there's a set of rules that determines whether or not you're in standards mode. So off means quirks and on means standards, because we couldn't think of any more confusing way to express it. Those two are different based upon whether or not you have the URL associated with it. That transitional does not have the URL to where the specification lives. It's one of the only two doc types where you have to put that in. And as a result, you think it has a doc type and therefore is in standards. It has a malformed doc type. It's incomplete, and therefore it gets quirks. And therefore, on older versions of IE, incidentally, this is why we made interoperable quirks, does not behave well. I think you're starting to get the idea, right? We're kind of a multiple personality disorder browser. And as soon as you understand that and you know what, I don't want to talk to you, Martha, I want to talk to Beth. As soon as you're asking for the right person, things get really predictable. And when you leave it up to chance, strange things happen. And so what if you leave here with nothing else other than this guy doesn't know how to operate Fiddler, it's that one piece of knowledge, which is own your doc type and be able to control it. Here's another example. And it's another example that also happens to end up being made better by our current document mode. So let's go ahead and drop this down to, say IE8 document mode, and so you can kind of great. Paused in the debugger. That's awesome. I think we should be good now. All right. It's the quirks. Boop. Yeah, interoperable quirks gets this one going well, and IE5 quirks brings the bug back. So this is considered a bug. And this is a bug that happens to be extremely prevalent in Japan. Because in Japan, culturally, all of their web pages are designed to be printed. It's a very highly printing culture. That just bled over to a line because of very small differences. And as a result, it's going to have the page breaks in the wrong spot, and that is considered a failure that causes massive escalations that tend to get me and Fred shipped over to Japan more often than we'd otherwise would probably choose. Although I do love sushi, so it doesn't take too long to ply me into going there. But here's the challenge of what they have, right? Is these things seem like they kind of move around. So if we explore exactly what's going on, I can use the F12 tools, go into the HTML finder, and say, all right, go ahead and find me where... You're not going to give that to me, huh? That's fantastic. The joy... No, just run it. Let me see if I can get now. Let me try it again. There we go. You clicked it back. Oh, how dare you? Put it in 5 quirks. Oh, the F12 tools don't give that to me. Fred, who broke that? All right. Well, I can drill in. I'm just going to dive through. I don't need no stinking thing to push me through there. Let's go find it. I'm just going to look for the table because I know it's there. There's a table sitting in the middle, and if I start looking through the table, here's the table body, the table rows, and you can see the widths are 25% across all of these, and there's clearly another table somewhere, so I'll go through. All of these things are done with tables. Width of 100%, and the body and the table rows, width of 7, 12, 9. Look at how precisely they're getting with all of these. So they're controlling how this thing is laid out using a table. Now, table is deprecated from a standards body perspective. And if we look at what a table is designed to do, the table definition, this is directly off the W3C recommendation, the width, let me actually look up the width element, tells you how long you'd like for it to be, and the width of a column is left up to, if something doesn't fit, left up to the user agent, which is how the standards refer to a browser. So literally, the very purpose of a table is to dynamically reflow the document if it doesn't fit. If you want something to never, ever reflow, putting it into an element that literally promises you that it will reflow might be a bad design choice. Right? And this is the challenge, is it happens to work, but those things change. And a couple of things that broke it were when we made the transition to Windows Vista and later, we changed the fonts that we shipped, and the default fonts made it behave differently. Some of them were a little bit wider, and that caused the flow to go off. So they fixed all of it. And then when we made the change to Direct2D, what we do, if you really, really zoom in closely, you can see how we get some of the subpixel rendering, which is... kind of hard to see here. That looks kind of gray. Subpixel rendering that can put it off by fractions of a pixel. That one particular reflow is based on a difference of 0.31 pixels difference, which happens to trigger a reflow because it went over a boundary. That's how closely they're measured in an element designed to reflow. So there are some design decisions as well. So when you think about updating things, this is something that I'll suggest that we need to start tracking better, which is we need to start tracking which of my applications are the most brittle and update those first. What is causing me to not be able to upgrade at the cadence that I'm interested in upgrading? No debugging, thank you. Let me close. I got a lot of web debuggers open here. And I want to kind of talk a little bit more about some of the other things that are going on in this space. So we talked about enterprise mode. I can show you a demo of some of the things that we've been providing. In fact, let me go and take a look at this now. This is a sample. So enterprise mode, if you're not familiar with it, from a configuration perspective, there are two components to it. Number one is whether or not you're going to provide a list of sites that need to use enterprise mode. It's XML, and it lets you go to whatever part of the path you want to. So you're no longer limited to top-level domain. You can completely configure it. And the second component is whether or not you want to enable it on the Tools menu, the Enable key. And if you do, do you have a URL that you want to post to inform us that you've clicked it? It's called what we call the phone home feature. Right? It's a crowdsourcing feature. If you don't want to test everything, you can choose an audience to go through and have this menu item turned on, and they'll report back so you can see it. And one of the first bits of feedback we got is, okay, so where is this going? Just into outer space? We're like, oh, it's going to your web listener service. And like, I don't have one of those, so we made one. This is the phone home sample. It's available off of GitHub in full source code mode. And it allows me to record all the things that are put in place. And then I can go in and look at how many times it was turned on or off, when was the last report, and start to look for correlations. If I turn it on and turn it back off, it probably didn't fix it. If I turn it on and leave it on, it probably is okay. Is it absolutely perfect? Is there room for notes? No, because we designed to make it really, really easy. Hey, this happened. Maybe you go take a look at it. Did you have a question?
How new is this?
We released this one. It was a few weeks after we released Enterprise Mode, so it's probably sometime in late August or early September. Did Premiere support know about it? I would certainly hope so. I know there are some folks in Premiere who do.
Because we logged a case about where do we post this to, and the response was, well, you've got to come up with something.
Yeah, so we originally had a sample. So when we released, we actually worked with one of our MVPs to take a real super one-liner feedback and just put it right into the IIS logs. Which kind of clunky, right? Because then all of a sudden, what's sitting in my log? That's really kind of strange. But it was one line of code, so it was massively easy to create. This one's based on SQL, and it's up on GitHub, and you can go through and use this as a foundational starting point for collecting this feedback. And that's part of the process of getting Agile is how do you gather input from more locations? I can showcase what this is. I mean, we'd have to spend a little bit of time because MSIT has it turned on, so it's a little bit terrifying to me that we, having supposedly not been on IE8 for many years, actually need enterprise mode at all for anything. If we want to go pick on it, we can go look and see what's actually on this list. That's interesting. And this group policy that keeps getting laid down. Yes? Oh, I've got 5 minutes left? All right. I keep fighting to get the group policy turned off so I can point it to my own for demo purposes, and I actually removed local system from having permission to this key and then took them off as being owner, and they reclaimed ownership. It's a battle between me and group policy. Going to show you, yeah, they actually reclaimed ownership. They used the take ownership permission on group policy. They're getting really aggressive. And they removed me. That's awesome. And, you know, we've been fighting back and forth with the group policy mavens, but I can fix that later. But I had it turned on and enabled this so we can collect that. So we provide this. So that was kind of the first volley. Because to kind of tie all the story back together, what are we trying to do? We've had a few tangents. It's kind of how I work. I like to have fun. I like what I do probably a little bit too much. But here's what it comes back to. We want to reduce fragmentation, and most people agree it's not good for anybody to have a whole bunch of different browsers that nobody agrees on. We'd like you to take advantage of new stuff, right? Because the modern web is really good. There's stuff you can do that you used to only be able to do with compiled code, and now you can just navigate there and start using it. That's really cool. So we want to help people get there. And we explain that, and most people say to me, you know what, I get it, I want to get there too. Why is it all on my back? So here's what we've been doing. Volley 1, enterprise mode. Here's a way, if you're on 8, to get there really, really fast. And people said, okay, great, that's useful. The next bit of feedback we got is, you know, well, but how do I test it? Well, that's why enterprise mode has the phone home feature, so we can crowdsource testing. We would probably consider coming out and helping in bulk all of you test all of your web applications if we thought we could. Here's what happens when we do that. We sit down, we go to site number 1, it asks us for a login that we don't have. We go to site number 2, it asks us for a login that we don't have. Site number 3, login we don't have. We really aren't very helpful when it comes to testing. Right, so you look at the total cost, you've got a cost, how much does it cost me to test it? How much does it cost me to fix it? Our perception is the cost of fixing has gone pretty darn low. Throw in an enterprise mode, right? Step 1, put in enterprise mode. If that works, right, then carry on, right? So test it with nothing, test with enterprise mode, invert your compat view in those 3 steps, and then filter the rest. That should be a small little pile. So that helps with testing. So then what else have we been doing, right? The thing that we just announced last week, I don't know if you noticed this, is people are then coming up saying, I don't know what people are using, right? The web browser is the number 1 source of shadow IT that we've got. I don't know what's important anymore. I'm not even sure that the business knows what's important. Can you help me figure that out? So we released a feature. Actually, we shipped it in October. We did a better job at shipping the code than we did at shipping the documentation, which tells you how to use the code, because you didn't even know it was there, I bet. The Enterprise Site Discovery Toolkit. And I actually changed the name to Discovery. It's the one claim to fame I have, is I got to modify that name, because they used to call it Inventory. And what I will say is, don't look for every single web application you have out there unless you're insane, because the average enterprise has on the order of 500 million web pages that all of their users will visit over a suitable amount of time. And if I say, all right, no problem, I'm just going to spend, I don't know, 30 seconds looking at those, so I only have to invest this many seconds in understanding what's important, right, or this many minutes, or this many hours, or this many days at 24 hours a day, or this many years, so that's no problem. 475 years from now, I'll know what matters to me today. Or I can just hire 500 people, and I'll know next year what matters to me today. And you can see it just gets absurd. Inventory doesn't make sense. Discovery does. Understanding what you're running and what people are visiting the most often, that's useful. But also understanding more information about it. So I can look at, well, what is the document mode? Do I have a situation where 70% of my applications are also in IE5 Quartz? And does that represent an opportunity? Because guess what? You're going to be hard-pressed to find kids coming out of college that know how to write code for IE5. Or who have ever used IE5 since they were 3. Because they had to. Because their parents had it on their work laptop. That's the only reason they would have ever hit it. Right? If everything is really old, there's an opportunity. You have an opportunity to measure, right? Can I put in a standard that says if you're going to make a new application, the new application has to be in a new document mode? Can I start putting in some gates? Well, it starts with understanding. Because believe me, The engineering team would love to get rid of these docket modes. They got a little bit overly aggressive in saying, we're going to deprecate all of them. They're all going away and terrify everybody. Right? At which point, then we ship a browser that breaks everything, and guess what you're going to do? You're not going to deploy it. It's really simple. We'd love to get rid of them because it costs us a lot more to maintain 7 different docket modes than it does for all of our competitors to maintain 2. Clearly, it's to our benefit to do that. But we'd like to help you get there and get ready first. And getting there starts with knowing what you've got. And the one thing that's not been disclosed yet until 3:15, and I'm going to cheat and talk about it now with Fred's permission. Fred's kind of permission. I'm just going to give you a little tease, which is, it's going to be going up in the IE blog later on today, and Fred's going to talk about it and even demo it. Not everyone here was on 8. There were 9s and 10s that raised their hand. And you very rightly could say to me, well, what about me? I went first. I trusted you. And why are you giving the love to the prodigal son over there? Well, we've got some love for you, too. Enterprise mode is expanding so that your site list will also let you pick any of the document modes. So if you want to undo the checkbox for compat view, you can replace that with a more manageable list. If you want to target 10 docket mode, 9 docket mode, you'll be able to, and Fred will tell you all about it. And believe me, that's a thing of beauty, because I think if you went to 9 or 10 and you didn't stick out and hang out on 8, you deserve some love, and we're going to give it to you.
I just got my demo working a few minutes ago.
So we've taken a bit of tour. Hopefully everyone sort of took in the enterprise mode love. How do you troubleshoot? When should you troubleshoot? Why should you move forward? So with that, I hope you all the best of luck in getting to a modern web browser and getting to a modern web so that you can carry on making magic and saving the world. Thank you very much.